The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story, and I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Hello, Bleeding Green Nation, and welcome back to another edition of BGN Radio. This is episode number 18. It may sound like a different voice, but this is John Stolness from BleedingGreenNation.com. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. You'll have to forgive me. I'm battling something of a chest cold or something going on here, so I'm going to Michael Kist the podcast a little bit here today. I'm going to take it down to the lower registers as Michael does. So maybe we need to use Michael's theme music. We'll leave that up to him. But we got a bye week special here for you. Myself and the brains behind the operation, the great BLG, Brandon Lee Gouten, is joining me once again. BLG, welcome to BGN Radio episode 18. How you doing, man?
John, thank you. I think we all need this bye week because I've been sick. You clearly, you know, you have whatever you have going on. Michael Kist has some kind of shoulder thing going on.
He's tweeting about that. Like, what is, oh, man.
The BGN crew is just like, you know, we're banged up too, apparently. So I think we need to use this bye week to get better. That's what we'll do after this podcast. We'll kind of have a nice weekend here to kind of just relax, hopefully, and watch some football, and then all get all ready for the second half of this Eagles season.
I told him Fight Club was a bad idea, but he just didn't want to listen. He just does his own thing. Michael Kist likes to do his own thing. But no, we got a great show lined up here for you. We're going to get into where the injury stuff stands here with the Eagles coming up in a little bit. We've got the midseason report card. Now the Eagles season is officially halfway done. We'll take a look at the schedules for the NFC East teams coming up here over the next, all the teams except the Giants, because really, you know, who cares? And we'll give you our picks. We'll do a couple extra games this week because we don't have an Eagles game to talk about. But obviously, BLG, the main thing to talk about here to start off is you and I have not had a chance to discuss the Golden Tate trade. And I know Michael and Ben did a great job on the Kist and Solak show breaking it all down, where Tate fits in on this year's team, where he fits in as far as the future is concerned, what it means for other wide receivers. But they broke down some really great X's and O's. Make sure you check out those podcasts. But for us, I think, we'll start off by asking the very simple question. A third rounder for Golden Tate, was it too much, BLG?
I don't think it's too much. It's a good question, right? Because there are... when you look at this move, I think it's easy to be like, okay, you gave up a third round pick, which is very valuable considering the Eagles are going to be tight on cap space in the future, for a player who, I mean, he probably doesn't make the difference between the Eagles winning the Super Bowl this year I said probably. I mean, there's a chance he does, but I just, you know, you look where the team is at. They're 4-4. I think they currently have like a 21% chance of making the playoffs per Football Outsiders metrics. So it's not even an awesome chance. You know, you're 4-4. Washington's 5-2. So they're in the division lead right now. So, I mean, and then the Eagles, you know, they have their work cut out for them in the second half of the schedule. So I think you can take the side of, you know, it was too much to give up. But I think that's not my take on it. I think my take is when you are 4-4, you're at the bye here, and you have this opportunity to make a run in front of you because you have 5 division games. You have games against the Saints and the Rams, which are very big games, obviously. I think, and most importantly of all, when you have a quarterback like Carson Wentz, who is playing as well as he is, and look, you know, some people are, I feel like, weirdly down on Carson Wentz. Like,
that's crazy. That's like, crazy.
The fumbles, I get, like, that's a mild concern to me. It's not a major issue. I know he's had, what, like 6 lost in 7 games here. I think that's a little bit, you know, like, I don't think I look at that and like, oh, man, that's going to sink the season. I think that's kind of just something that's been an issue, but will kind of work itself out. And like, I'll take those fumbles, considering how good his passing numbers are. So,
and by the way, Aaron Rodgers was a very big fumbler earlier in his career because both were playmakers. They waited too long. They were trying to make plays in the pocket.
Yeah, like yes, you can be frustrated with Carson Wentz fumbling, but then like you also, if that's the case, you also have to look at those big plays he makes when he's extending the play and holding onto the ball and take those too. I mean, you know, you have to take the good with the bad. So
right,
but the overall point there just being, I think he's playing at such a high level and he's shown that that's not just a fluke. You know, this is something he obviously did in 2017 before he got hurt, that, you know, like he can get hot. And I think based around that, this team can go on a run late in the season. I mean, we've seen plenty of things that should give you legitimate pause, especially, you know, the offensive line is banged up here. And, you know, Lane Johnson could potentially miss a month. You know, the secondary allows too many big plays. Like, there are issues here. I'm not trying to make it seem like there aren't. But I think the overall point is when you have a quarterback who can potentially be elite, like I think Carson Wentz can be, I think the Eagles are allowed to delude themselves a little bit. Now, this would be like a different case, you know, if they had Sam Bradford right, or someone, or even Nick Foles at this point in the season, like starting for the rest of the year. And then they're making this trade when it's like, okay, they clearly don't have a real chance to contend. So I think, you know, given that they have a prayer, at least, of a chance to compete with Carson, and you're getting a player who directly helps him, which is sure, like, how can that ever really be too much of a bad thing, considering, you know, he is the franchise? And what did we say? Like, what has been one of this team's biggest issues this year? We've been saying they don't make enough big plays. And Golden Tate isn't your traditional, you know, like deep threat guy that would have been great to get. Like, if, you know, the Eagles could have gotten DeSean Jackson, that would have been great. But clearly he wasn't available. So what did they get? Probably one of the next best things they could have in that regard, and a guy who makes big plays after the catch. Literally, like, the best player in the NFL at that, right? Right. Now, like, production-wise, like, think about that. They didn't just get, like, a solid player. They got a guy who is elite in a certain category that was a big need. So when I look at it like that, I know this is a long-winded answer, I think it's a totally unacceptable trade. It's a little rich, I guess I would say, for my taste. Like, if this is a 2019 fourth, I think it's kind of like an amazing trade, a great trade, a perfect trade. The third rounder makes it sting a little bit, but the fact that you could potentially get that compensatory pick back, you know, or not really back, but, you know, you get something back on the, it's not like pennies on the dollar. It's probably like 2/4 on the dollar, maybe, depending what kind of comp pick you get back in 2020, if he signs with the team next year. And then just at a very basic, like, fan level, it's just fun. Like, the team's going to be more fun now. And I'm all for that. Like, here's the thing. Like, I know we're always going to break down moves here from, like, you know, a quote unquote objective standpoint, you know, and, you know, like, we get into the analysis of it, but sometimes you just want to be a fan and you want to have fun. And Golden Tate makes this team more fun. And we're all going to have to watch this team for 8 more games. So anything that makes them more fun, maybe, yes, there's going to be a cost of the future, but, you know, I'm going to take my time and enjoy it right now.
You know, I got to say, it didn't occur to me until just now, but, I'm a baseball guy as well as being an Eagles guy, and I host the Hit and Season podcast for The Good Fight. And, you know, we were talking a lot during the trade deadline in baseball when the Phillies were buyers, and they were in first place when they were buying different players. And, you know, some of these guys that they were buying, I didn't know if they were really going to make the difference or anything, but it was fun. Just like you said, it was fun to be a buyer at the trade deadline. If you're an Eagles fan, like you said, you should be allowed to delude yourselves a little bit. You are the defending world champions, and you still have a lot of talent on this roster. A third to me is a lot. I was really hoping that it would be nothing more than a fourth, because I'm not convinced that this team can match up with the Rams or the Saints or even the Vikings at this point, given the way the Vikings beat the Eagles earlier this year. But this team is going to get some guys back, which we're going to talk about here in just a few minutes as well. I will note the difference between third and fourth rounders in recent Eagles drafts is pretty eye-opening. I was looking this up because I thought initially it would be a fourth, and looking at the past fourth round picks, Avante Maddox from this year looks to be a pretty good pick, but you had Josh Sweat in the fourth round last year, Mac Hollins and Donnell Pumphrey in the fourth round. They had no fourth round pick in 2016 or 15. In 2014, they drafted Jalen Watkins in the fourth round. In 2013, they drafted Matt Barkley in the fourth round. Brandon Boykin was in the fourth round in 2012. He was a decent defensive player, but, you know, not a star. Alex Henry and Casey Matthews in the fourth round in 2011. Ugh. So again, these are not big name players, but when you look in the third round, you see some better talent. Curtis Marsh. Okay, no, not in 2011, but Vinnie Curry. And I'm sorry, Nick Foles, obviously in 2012.
Weird one there. Weird one to judge.
Yeah, that one is kind of weird to judge. We have Benny Logan the next year in 2013, was a productive player for a few years. Josh Huff was trash, 2014. We'll just move on past that. Yeah. But Jordan Hicks in 2015 is a star. Mm-hmm. Isaac Seumalo, again, an up-and-down guy, but he's providing some good...
Starter, yeah, right now.
Yeah, starter for you right now in the third round in 2016. Rasul Douglas in 2017 can't get on the field, but has looked okay when he's been out there this year. You know, I mean, so... Again, I think there's a little bit more value when you're talking about that third round pick. Obviously, it's a round higher, but even in recent Eagles drafts, you've gotten nothing from that fourth round pick, basically. Whereas with the third round, you got a Super Bowl winning quarterback out of it, an all pro caliber linebacker, and some other pretty good pieces.
Yeah, that's what the I think the difference right there. Like if it had just been a fourth, I think it kind of would have been a no brainer, but it wasn't. And I think Howie Roseman, you know, he said it very bluntly. It was like, it just, the price is what it was at a certain point. And like, it's like either we're getting this guy and we're not, or we're not. So,
Did Amari Cooper screw up the compensation?
Yeah, yes. Yeah,
he kind of had
did.
To, right?
I mean, for the whole league, I mean, maybe, I'm not going to say like the Cowboys were actually secret geniuses here, but it's like maybe that was the unintended consequence of trading. Like, that's dumb. You shouldn't.
It hurts them more than us, but yeah, I get what you're saying.
You shouldn't give up something so much that it's like, oh, we're just going to screw the whole trade market by giving up way too much. I mean, that's still stupid because you gave up way too much, but I think it definitely did. I mean, because I think it just for trades that didn't even happen. Like, you know, you look at like the Patrick Peterson whole thing. Like, how could the Cardinals possibly trade Patrick Peterson for anything less than a first at that point? If Amari Cooper is getting a
absolutely.
First. Like, so it kind of did throw things out of whack, and it probably raised it. But I mean, even still, you look at that, I mean, you bring up Amari Cooper. I mean, like, would you rather give up a first for Amari Cooper, who, you know, is obviously under contract for the rest of this year, and then he has that fifth year option next year, although it's at a high cap number. So like you're and he's only 24. So, you know, he's young and he has upside in theory, but also he's just not as good of a player as Golden Tate.
No,
like, if you're looking for immediate value, I mean, and you look at the fact that the Eagles only had to give up a third, and, you know, they're going to get a compensatory pick back. Like, that's another, again, part of the equation there where the Cowboys aren't, because Cooper's on his fifth-year option here. So
Right.
Year. And they're probably going to try to, I would imagine, try to sign him long-term. You know, so I think you put it in perspective. And then you also look at, again, at the Demaryius Thomas trade, which is a fourth and a swap of sevenths, I believe. And, you know, again, if I'm the Eagles, I'd rather have Golden Tate for third than Demaryius Thomas's awful contract and the ability he brings, which I don't even know what really it is at this point, when, especially when you're the idea of like Alshon don't need that. So I'm excited. I'm legitimately excited to watch Golden Tate. You know, I have a Lions fan friend, so I'm probably a little bit more tuned into the Lions than your average Eagles fan. I wouldn't say I'm an expert on them, but you know, I have a little bit more of an eye on them because of that. So, And I know he's made some big plays, and I love that. You know, he against the Cowboys this year, earlier this season, he had a big, huge game against them. And the way I think Eagles fans are really going to love him. Just it might even, you know, only be these 8 games, but just like the swagger he plays with, you know, you look at that Cowboys game, he's like taunting Cowboys players as he's running beautiful. Into the end zone. It's great. Like, if he does that here, and let me tell you, he will. It'll be awesome. So I'm just really looking forward to that. I think, you know, you don't want to base the whole entire trade around it. But when you look at the bonus factors, like he's going to be, I think, a great addition for this locker room. That's a nice little bonus, too. So very, very impressive. His first press conference and everything. I'm really looking forward to watching him play.
But the locker room was really important last year, too. So it's great to get a guy who can add to the locker room as opposed to, you know, if they'd gone out and gotten Shady McCoy or somebody like that, or, you know, even, who knows, it might not have been as good a fit. So I'm excited about it. And I kind of wonder what this means for the snap count moving forward. I mean, this is a team that played a lot of 2 tight end sets here through the first half of the season. Do you think we're going to see more 3 wide receiver sets now moving forward, or is it going to be some combination of empty backfield, 2 tight end, 3 wide receiver? I mean, obviously this gives Doug Peterson, and this would not have been made if Doug Peterson, I don't think, had an idea how he was going to be able to use Tate in coordination with all of his other players. But what do you think this means for player usage for the rest of the second half of the season?
Well, we know Doug Peterson does love his 11 personnel. The Eagles were one of the best teams, I think, last year in running out of 3 wide receiver sets, you know, spread it out and then run. So that's certainly something that you might be able to do a little bit more now with that. I think overall, I mean, obviously Alshon isn't going to be impacted. The big thing is Nelson. Like, how is Nelson Aguilar's role going to change? Not only in just in terms of the playing time, but usage. Like, are we going to see him more outside? Maybe we should, because he hasn't really done much at the line of scrimmage this year. You know, when the Eagles are trying to get to the ball to him there and make guys miss, he just hasn't been that kind of guy. He hasn't had that great of a year. And meanwhile, when we've seen him get deeper down the field on some of these opportunities, I mean, we saw it against the Jaguars even this past week, and it was great to see. To see him a little bit more effective in that way. So that'll be interesting. I mean, it certainly pushes Jordan Matthews down the depth chart after him having the best game of his season and one of the better games in his career, honestly, so far. And then it's interesting, too, because I don't know for sure, and we'll touch on this a little bit more, if Mike Wallace comes back, but then you have to consider how that plays into things too. But for now, I mean, I think it's simple as you're getting an offensive weapon, and I'm very confident in Doug Peterson's ability to incorporate him here. And it should be fun because and very important too. And talking about, you know, what are some of the biggest concerns with this team still going into the second half? Again, like Lane Johnson could be out for a month, apparently, with this, what's being called, I guess, an MCL tear or sprain, whatever it is, some kind of knee issue. So that'll be concerning. The Eagles' protection, in theory, will be a concern. So to have a guy who you can get the ball to out quick and then have him make plays, as opposed to, okay, let's, you know, drop Carson back and have him hold on to the ball and hope someone can get open deep. Now you can still go with this quick passing offense and still hope to generate some big plays out of it. So, you know, I do think we're going to see, I mean, you traded for Golden Tate, so you better use him a lot. So I think we're going to see a lot of 11. I think we're just going to see, I think he's going to see a lot of targets too, because he should. I mean, again, you traded for him, get some use out of him.
Yeah, and I think that, and obviously that means maybe a little bit less Dallas Goedert, but certainly you got Tate. You want to use him, and you only have him for 8 games because, like you said, he is a free agent at the end of the year. They do have Nelson Aguilar on that fifth-year contract, but they could, as you've heard Ben and Mike talk about on their podcast as well, they could let Nelson go and decide to try and keep Golden Tate. But, you know, obviously you're going to have to see how this all plays out here over the next few weeks, whether or not Tate is a fit. I mean, it sure seems like he's going to be a fit. And I am, you know, we knew that the team, well, we at least we suspected after the win against the Jaguars on Sunday that Howie Roseman was going to make some kind of a move. It was just a matter of, would he get himself a running back? Would he try and get himself some help on the defensive line, maybe in the secondary or at wide receiver? He went with wide receiver, BLG. But no help was added at the running back position. So it looks like for the remainder of the year, we're going with Corey Clement, who has underwhelmed here this year, again, playing with some injuries. Wendell Smallwood, who is extremely limited in his effectiveness and his ability. And Josh Adams, he's a guy who showed some ability last week against Jacksonville, but again, is unproven. So, you know, it's a backfield that could have used some help. I guess the thinking here is we're just going to pass all the time and we're not really going to focus on the run game as much. I hope people remember how many big plays the running game ripped off last year. How many long runs Jay Ajayi had. Even LeGarrette Blount had some big running plays during the course of the season last year. Some of those big plays last year came from running backs running the ball out of the backfield.
Clearly something's up there. And Corey is averaging 1.0 yards per carry in his last 12 attempts. His 12 rushing attempts in the last two games for 12 yards. I mean, that's not very good. And, like, it's not just the offensive line, because when you look at the other players, like, Wendell Smallwood isn't producing awesome, but he's at least at, like, 3 yards per carry. And he's had some important runs, like he did to ice the game against the Jaguars on that 2nd and 9 where he runs for 10 yards. And that was just, you know, a really good play by him to fight through contact and get that first down. And then again, Josh Adams, undrafted rookie free agent. I mean, he's coming out and he's been the most efficient runner on this team in the past 2 games. And there's a small sample size and he had that fumble and he's kind of limited in his usage because it's not like you're going to put him out there and the defense is like, oh, man. Are they going to throw to Josh Adams? I mean, they did last week and he had a 6-yard gain, but you know, that's not going to be like the usual. It's not like they're going to give Josh Adams like 5 targets in the passing game in a single game. So it's interesting because we had heard the Eagles, you know, were looking into running backs and not just Le'Veon Bell and LeSean McCoy, some names behind the scenes as well. So it's definitely a position they were looking into. With Clement being disappointing, I mean, you have to, right? I mean, like, I hope he's hurt, basically, because you know, like, if this is who he is, then that's a big concern. And I'm holding out hope that's, you know, that's not the case, but it's not really encouraging right now. I'm still not a big Wendell Smallwood believer. I don't know how you can be. He's been fine. It's just like you're not going to get anything special out of him, just in my opinion. And again, he's only averaging like 3 yards per carry here in these past 2 games. Like it's just not. And more than that, it's just, again, like the thing that gets me with him is, you know, you'll see these big holes open up for him at times and he just turns 20 yard gains into like 5 yard gains. It's just, it's frustrating. You're not getting that big play with him. So,
well, he's a fifth round pick for crying out loud.
He is not a
guy.
He's fine. Yeah. He's not like, I'm not saying he sucks, but like, he's fine. He is what he is. He's not a needle mover by any means. And to count on him more than that, just that's frustrating to me. Like he is what he is. Let's call it like it is. And Josh Adams, I mean, I don't think, you know, I think I kind of joke when I say he's running back one, but I mean, if he's going to produce like this, get him some carries. Against the Giants a couple weeks ago, he didn't play at all. Like, let's not do that. If he's going to be productive, get him in there and let's see if he can continue to do that. I mean, the biggest X factor, I guess, here is obviously, you know, how does Darren Sproles impact things? Is he going to get back?
Dude, I forgot all about Darren Sproles.
And you should, because he's been played since week one. I had kind of seen it floated out there. I don't remember who said this, but the Eagles kind of feel like they've been holding him out intentionally, thinking like, hey, let's not rush him back. Let's legitimately get him back healthy. Like, let's not force him to come back and work through this hamstring issue. And then he's trying to play on a bad hamstring and then he's just out for the year. Like, let's try to get it right. And hopefully, I guess he can potentially be ready after this bye week. And that would be a big boost, I think, to the backfield. I know John, you and I have talked about it, how people kind of like, oh, the offense is better without him. I mean, not really, not to me. I mean,
I've seen that's not the case.
I'd rather him get some more touches than, you know, give him to Corey Clement, who's not doing anything right now, or Wendell Smallwood, who still isn't super impressive. So if you get him back, you know, and if he can, he doesn't even need to be like, you know, vintage Darren Sproles. He can just be like, give you some juice here and there. And we saw that against the Falcons in week one, where like one of the more, I think, underrated plays of the season late in that game when Foles threw to him short of the sticks and he made a couple guys miss and got a key first down. Like, that's all we need out of him.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And hopefully this hamstring will get better. And now with the bye week, he's had two full, and you know, another extra week to recover. Hopefully this is just kind of what they were waiting for, but we'll wait and see how that all shakes out. Let's just talk about a couple other teams here at the trade deadline. We saw the Redskins get an already good defense. They got another weapon, Clinton Dix, to play safety for them. Obviously, the Eagles were kind of sniffing around the secondary market, but the Redskins went out and ended up getting Clinton Dix. Was it for a fourth rounder, I think it was? Or yeah, fourth rounder for Clinton Dix. You know, it's kind of interesting. I have kind of the defense points wise has been doing a pretty good job this year. It's when they've been giving up points that has been the big problem for this team. And in sports, I know that you look at the final stats and you say, well, the numbers are what the numbers are. But really, how you go about accumulating the stats are sometimes as important as the stats themselves. And so I was just thinking, would you rather have strengthened your secondary, especially the safety position, with a guy like Clinton Dix for a fourth rounder? Would that have been more beneficial to the team than improving with Golden Tate at wide receiver for a third rounder? I'm not so sure. I wouldn't have rather had Clinton Dix for a fourth rounder, but you know, it's probably six and one half dozen in the other.
It's definitely a trade that interests me. If the Eagles had given up a fourth for Now, it's kind of tough. Like, let's be real, or at least I'll be real. Like, I haven't seen Clinton Dix play a ton this year. Like, I can't tell you. But from what I can tell, and there's kind of a disagreement here. I mean, like, PFF apparently has him as their second greatest safety. So that's good, I guess. But then you look at Packers beat writers and they're like, no, he's actually been pretty bad this year. And, you know, he's made some plays, yeah, but he's also blown assignments and it's been really bad in some regards. So that's kind of interesting to see. And we'll see how that goes. It's interesting because the Eagles were interested in Clinton Dix back in 2014, the Marcus Smith draft. He was one of those, I think it was six players that they wanted. Like, it was Clinton Dix, it was C.J. Mosley, it was Kyle Fuller, it was Odell Beckham Jr. I forget a couple of the other names in there, but it was like a group of guys that they wanted at pick. I think what they had like 21 or 22 that year, and then they were all gone. Specifically went like a pick or two before the Eagles got a chance to draft him there. I think Brandon Cooks was in there too. The Packers had, I think, traded up for him. So the Eagles were interested in him back then. So I don't, you know, I don't know if that was Chip because he was still around. I don't know if that was Howie. So you would think, you know, my point there is that you would think they might have made a move for him if that was the case and if they were still super high in him and they knew they could get him for a fourth. But I just think it really says, I think it speaks to their confidence in Avante Maddox. I think like the coaching staff has clearly praised him time and time again, and it's not empty words. Like they truly believe in him, and I think that's good. And look, Avante Maddox made arguably, you know, one of the biggest plays of the season when he tackled Keelan Cole. You know, did a great job of putting his helmet on the ball and forcing that thing out. I mean, that setup, that was huge because that set up the Dallas Goedert touchdown. Yep. Another rookie from the 2008 draft class to make a huge play. And that really, like, that the game was almost kind of like, you know, it, I don't want to say it was won, but it was shifted right there. It was huge. So I think they really like him. And, you know, they have some issues and injuries in the secondary, again, as we'll get to here. But I'm not going to, like, totally kick myself for that. But it is kind of – it was a little frustrating to see that, to be honest, because it's like, okay, we get this – all right, we got Golden Tate. And then it's like, oh, man, Washington got a little better, too, at the deadline. And, you know, they're obviously already ahead of the Eagles in the standing. So that was a little bit annoying to see. But it's kind of interesting how all four NFC East teams made a trade, you know, like with the Giants selling off Eli Apple and Damon Harrison, and then you know, the Cowboys giving up the first, which is still very dumb.
Amazing.
For Cooper, and then the Eagles making their move and Washington making their move. So there's an NFC East arms race here, and obviously the Giants a little bit different because they're in seller's mode.
Yeah, one team is losing arms. The other teams are all trying to get some more.
Way to put it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to talk about the Browns real quick a little bit later on in the podcast. But the Browns had an interesting week as well. But we were just talking about the secondary a little bit. Let's just talk about kind of where the Eagles stand on the injury front, because we're in the bye week. We're not getting the practice, you know, who's been in practice, who hasn't been in practice this week because the players have the week off. So we're not really getting regular updates on the status of certain players, but we did find out Jalen Mills could be out for potentially a few games with an injured ankle. And you know, it's, I think I saw tonight that he's walking around in a walking boot or something like that with a limp.
Oh, really?
That does not. Yeah. I forget who tweeted that out.
Is that the Sixers? I guess he's at the Sixer team. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, right, exactly. Yeah, somebody tweeted out that they saw him in a walking boot kind of limping around. So who knows? I mean, that just could be, you know, Twitter reporters. But right. At the very least, it certainly doesn't sound like Mills is, you know, ready to jump back into the fray. Who knows what it'll be like in time for the Cowboys game in a couple of weeks. But it's looking like they could be without Jalen Mills for a little while, which, again, you're dealing with a secondary here where you're already trying to figure out how to deal with a bunch of injuries. You've got Sidney Jones, who has missed the last couple of games. Do you know, where do things stand here with the secondary, with Mills and Sidney Jones and the rest of the puzzle they're trying to put together?
Yeah, I mean, Ian Rappaport had said that Jalen Mills is considered week to week from what he heard. And I think we have to take that with a grain of salt, because injury reporting has kind of been, and just reporting in general, and I'm not trying to pick on Ian here. I'm just like calling it for what it is. Like, some of it's just been wrong. So we'll see.
Right.
I think, you know, hearing that specific designation week to week, you know, is vague, but he probably heard that, you know, like, we know the Eagles coaching staff, especially Doug, likes to use that term. So I'm assuming he had heard that from, you know, Eagles internal sources. And if that's the case, that means Jalen Mills is going to miss at least one game, because that's usually what that week to week designation means. It usually means multiple games. So if that's the case, that means I assume Rasul Douglas will be starting on the outside. But you have to consider, what if Sidney Jones is able to come back right after the bye, which I don't know for sure. We don't have a good indication on that, because he was also described as week to week back when he first got hurt after the Giants game. So Sidney Jones might not be ready, but if he is, it'll be interesting, because maybe it's him on the outside in base defense, and then you're shifting him into nickel as the slot corner, and then you could have Rasul come in to play the outside in those situations. So I'll be really interested to see what that configuration looks like, because if you don't get Sidney Jones back, then all of a sudden you have Dexter McDougal, who looks like a guy who got signed off the street playing nickel as your slot corner. You have a rookie safety, you know, who, and Avante Maddox, who's playing out of position on the back end. And then you have Rasul Douglas, your backup cornerback, starting on the outside all of a sudden. So that'll be not the best potential configuration you could have there. So hopefully the big thing is there. If Sidney can come back, that'd be pretty important for that lineup there. It sounds like, you know, Mills will be back at some point. It doesn't sound like it's season ending, clearly, if it's week to week, but we shall see here. The Eagles certainly have more configuration and lineup things to work through there.
Absolutely. And one name that we heard kind of get floated around this week by Howard Eskin, when the team traded for Tate, they waived defensive tackle Bruce Hector, which, you know, if you're looking at the roster and they release a defensive tackle, he mentioned the fact that maybe we could be nearing a return from Timmy Jernigan at some point this year. What are you thinking about? I mean, it kind of felt like Jernigan's was basically kind of persona non grata for this year. And, you know, that, but now is there starting to be a little bit of a groundswell that maybe we might see him again here in 2018?
I mean, it's pretty interesting that Howard Eskin would say there's a good chance. Like, I mean,
yeah,
that's pretty
strong.
Yeah, that's strong. It's not like, oh, maybe he'll be back. He did say it was a quote unquote possibility. So he kind of, I feel like he hedged a little at the end there. But I mean, that would be huge. If you could get Tim Jernigan back on this team, that'd be a pretty big deal. So I sure hope it's true, but it's hard for me to count on it just because, you know, everything we've heard behind the scenes hasn't been very optimistic. I mean, he's been at practice, not practicing, but he's been out there. So, you know, maybe that's a good sign. I don't know. It's very hard to tell. All of this Tim Jernigan situation has kind of been a really a big mystery. I mean, honestly, we still don't even know how he got hurt. So yeah. Like, this whole thing has been like a big kind of, and I've always said, like, you kind of almost have to treat it like money in your pocket. Like, you know, don't expect it to be there. If you get it, great. Awesome. What a good surprise. But I just don't think you'll be able to count on it. The only thing I can go back to, the only timeline we got was when he had first gotten hurt, and Schefter had said, I think, 4 to 6 months. And that was back around May. So we're in November now.
Yeah.
So maybe we are approaching that point. That would be huge. The only thing I'm a little skeptical of here is that when you're on NFI, Wakey is, you're eligible to start practicing in week 7. As soon as week 7. That doesn't mean you have to start practicing then. But you get this 21-day window where a player can start practicing, and then at any point within that window, you can activate them, or if the window expires, you shut them down for the season. So that window hasn't started, you know, clearly, because Jernigan hasn't returned to practice. So it'd be kind of weird to me if all of a sudden, like, all right, he's back right before the Cowboys game. Like, I would just be very surprised if that was the case. But maybe potentially he returns to practice leading up to the Cowboys game, which then means he would have a couple weeks to kind of get back and gear up and get into shape a little bit here before maybe returning later in November. I think that's, like, to me, that is the realistic best outcome. But, like, if you could get him back, that'd be huge, because right now this roster, this defensive line, the only defensive tackles on the roster right now are Fletcher Cox, Haloti Ngata, who came back, which is good to see, against the Jaguars, and then Trayvon Hester. And then I'm sure they'll try to bring Bruce Hector back to the practice squad. They still have Winston Craig on the practice squad. So they have guys down the line there. But, you know, you lost Derek Barnett. And the way, I think one of the underreported, or one of the things we're not really talking about a lot coming out of that game, is the Eagles didn't really move Josh Sweat up the pecking order. He still only played 4 defensive snaps. So what that means, excuse me, I'm losing my voice too, they just played everyone else more. Like Chris Long, Michael Bennett, Brandon Graham, they all saw more workloads. And that's concerning because they're older players.
Yeah.
And the strength of this defensive line in part is supposed to be they can rotate these guys and have them be fresh. That wasn't the case against the Jaguars. They kind of just gave all the vets more playing time. If you can get Timmy Jernigan in here, all of a sudden that kind of takes the burden off of, you know, guys like Michael Bennett and Brandon Graham having to play in the interior. So it would be, and then just the fact that Jernigan, assuming even he's the same player after this injury, which we don't know for sure, but if he can come back and he can be a guy who pushes the pocket from the interior, I mean, that's awesome to have that, have him, to have Fletcher Cox in there, creating problems for the other offenses like that. Like, that would be huge. I wouldn't say count on it, but the fact that there is some kind of optimism, or it's being talked about, you know, I think it's fair to get like a little bit hopeful about it.
Yeah, the fact that it's not that it's a non-zero chance, I think definitely leads one to be a little bit optimistic about it. But again, certainly nothing you can count on. And last thing on the injury front, we're coming up on the time when the Eagles will have to make a decision on their guys who are on injured reserve, whether or not they can activate any two of those players. And right now, it's looking like the first two that they'll have to make a decision on is tight end Richard Rodgers and wide receiver Mac Collins, and then a little bit after that, Mike Wallace. So basically, two of those three guys the Eagles could pull off, because any player on IR starting in week 9 wouldn't be able to play again in the regular season. With the addition of Golden Tate, one would think that one of those wide receivers, either Hollins or Mike Wallace, might be in some trouble. Although I could also envision a scenario, BLG, where if you're going to play a lot more three wides, maybe you don't need three tight ends. And so do you end up looking at which guy will work better for you on special teams and making your selection that way?
Yeah, it's an interesting decision. So before we get even into like who they're going to activate, as far as eligibility goes, Mac Hollins and Richard Rodgers are going to be, they're eligible to come off like right now. Like they've missed the 8 games that have been required for them to come off the IR list. So if the Eagles wanted to, they could, you know, activate them leading up to this Cowboys game here. A little bit of an interesting thing that I guess I had forgot about was that these players can actually return to practice 6 weeks after, so after 6 games. So we haven't seen that quite yet. But at the same time, if they do that, if once they return to practice, that means you've designated them to return. Like you can't have them practice and then like they're not like that's where you're making the decision at the point. So I think the Eagles are kind of like holding off on here because I don't think they want to commit too early, you know, right? Because like what if, God forbid, you know, a tight end suffers an injury. Well, then all of a sudden you're going to need to activate Richard Rodgers. But maybe, you know, if it's everything's looking fine there and, you know, they're not looking as good at receiver, then you activate Mac Hollins. So I think they're kind of like holding on pretty much until the last possible moment they can to activate that. And I think that's a good idea. I think that's fine. But so it's those two guys who are eligible to be activated this week. And we did hear Doug Peterson mention, I think he mentioned Richard Rodgers first, actually, when he was asked about these players ready to return. And then he mentioned Mac. And then he said Mike Wallace is a little bit further off. I don't know if that meant in terms of his actual injury recovery or also just the fact that he got hurt after those guys. But it was only like a week after. He only got hurt in the week 2 game. Right. So I think he's eligible to come back after week 10 in that case. So that's still, he's still a little bit away here, but he should be eligible to practice now because he's missed 6 games. So we'll see. Like he, and potentially he could be back if he's healthy enough, which I don't know, but he could be in theory, if they want to designate him. And they've kind of talked about that. The coaching staff has been, and we've seen that reports too, that their team is kind of optimistic about Mike Wallace. And even with getting Tate, I don't think that necessarily rules him out because like you still need that vertical guy and Tate isn't, you know, that guy and Mike Wallace is. So, I think you can still kind of we'll see on that one. We don't know for sure. But the fact that it sounds like they're going to get 2 of those 3 guys back for sure is still a good sign, because even if it's not Wallace and it's Mac Hollins, I mean, Mac has some deep playability. And like you said, he helps out on special teams. I mean, I know that's not like the most exciting thing, but it's true. So
it's important.
It's a nice little bonus. So we'll see here. I still don't know for sure. I don't really have like a great sense right now, but I think those 3 guys are clearly the options. And I think after the bye here, we should have a better idea of where those things stand.
All right. Well, let's kind of move on. And now we're mid-season. One of the fun things to do is always give a mid-season report card. And we'll knock these out quickly here, BLG, because we want to get to the NFC East schedules looking ahead, kind of see maybe who has the easiest, who has the roughest schedule moving forward in the NFC East, and we'll give you some picks. I have 5 games that I pulled out, so we'll do that. But let's just knock out some grades here for the Eagles here through the first half of the season. And, first one we got to talk about is Carson Wentz. You know, his accuracy is the best it's ever been. He's on pace for 30 touchdowns and 5 interceptions this year. He missed the first couple of games of the season because of the injury, but has come back looking like the type of quarterback we were hoping we would see. You know, you were kind of hoping last year wasn't a fluke. To me, I don't see any other grade for Carson Wentz that makes sense anything else other than, I would say, give him a B+ at this point. The only reason why he's not in A territory is because of the fumbles. What do you think?
I would give him an A just because I get the fumbles, and you look at those and that's frustrating, but you just look at his supporting cast and the fact that he's also coming off an ACL injury, and for him to look as good as he does despite all of that, to me, that's what bumps it up, because I don't think that gets talked about enough. We're comparing all these guys like Patrick Mahomes and Jared Goff and all these young quarterbacks. Like, those guys are in great situations. They have a ton of offensive weapons.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Like, and for Carson to be in the mix with those guys, despite, you know, some of the adversity he's had to deal with. And again, those guys aren't coming off ACL injuries either. So to me, it's an A. I was going to say A- for Carson, but I was like, you know what? No, because Carson Wentz is the second quarterback in NFL history with at least 30 pass attempts and a passer rating of at least 115 for consecutive games. And the other one is Peyton Manning. in 2012. So you look at a lot of these numbers and the context that he's in. I think he's been very impressive, and I'm going to give Carson an A.
All right. Let's look at the running backs. Obviously, we're not going to grade each running back, but let's talk about the running back unit as a whole. Obviously, injuries have decimated this unit. Jay Ajayi, who was lost early in the season, and when he was healthy, he was running well. But now you've, like we said, got the triumvirate of Josh Adams, Wendell Smallwood, and Corey Clement, who have really had a hard time getting the running game going. You know, this is not as talented a group as we had last year, but they haven't killed the team, but they also haven't really done a whole lot to help. I'm going to give the running backs a C+.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go just straight. I might go C-, just because, you know, Corey Clement has not been, you know, very good at all. I think Wendell Smallwood is just, he's fine. He's definitely excelled relative to expectations, but I mean, they were so low. I mean, we didn't even think he was going to make the team for sure. I mean, he was battling for the fourth running back spot, so it's just not saying much. And Josh Adams, you know, has shown some promise here, but it's really too small of a sample size for me to give a high grade just based off of that. And then Darren Sproles, you know, the injury there, and again, the Ajayi injury kind of just being disappointing, not necessarily their faults, but overall, just haven't been super impressed. So I'll say C-.
All right, I'll let you start off on the wide receivers.
All righty. So what do we have here? We have a wide receiver core that was looking terrible at the beginning of the year here when you're playing Kamar Aiken like almost the whole game. Injuries were tough there. But look, Alshon's come back. He's looked even better than last year, which has been great to see.
Really?
Unfortunately, Nelson Agholor has not looked very good. You can kind of question usage versus is it him?
To me, that's more what it is with him, just to kind of interrupt you for a second.
I
see, you know, they have been trying to use him to help out the running game, or at least to provide deception for the running game with all of the jet sweeps that they're running with him. I mean, I know they're not actually running him every other play on a jet sweep, but it almost feels that way, the amount that they're doing it. So I think that's part of it, is he's not going down. He's playing horizontal.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that's him. It's too much horizontal. You can't get into a flow that way.
I think a little bit is him, just because when you look at how bad the numbers are, like, I think you have to give some of it to the player.
Oh, absolutely.
And I don't think he's been as elusive, maybe. I don't know. But
I think that's true.
I think it can go on both sides. So you look at them. Jordan Matthews has come in here and been, you know, pretty good for what you probably, like, realistically would have expected. I still don't think he's this great player, but I think he, relative to expectation, he's performed pretty fine, pretty well. Certainly better than, like, you know, if you had kept Kamar Aiken around. So that's good. Shelton Gibson has been a huge disappointment. The fact that this team needs big plays and he can't even get on the field is, like, I mean, I don't even, it's a point where, like, you can't even fully blame the coaching staff, because you have to feel like he is just not doing something that's giving them the confidence to put him out there. So that's very disappointing. So overall, I look at this group, I probably say maybe C+, just because I really like what Alshon has done and I feel good about that. But, you know, if I'm adding the Golden Tate trade, and I know it's not what we're doing here, because we're doing report card of what we've seen so far. But if we're projecting to the future, I mean, I'm willing to bump that up to like a B position getting Tate. I think that makes a significant difference. But for what we've seen now, I'm just going to say C+.
Yeah, I think the future is definitely brighter for the rest of the season with the wide receiver core. But Alshon Jeffrey gets an A+, obviously, and so that will bring up the overall grade. But I'm going to go with a C for the wide receivers for a lot of the reasons that you just mentioned. All right, BLG, offensive line.
Offensive line, you know, been a tough year in terms of, you know, Jason Peters constantly in and out of the lineup. Lane Johnson now is banged up. You had a left guard who got benched a couple games into the season with Wisniewski out of the lineup, and now back in at times with Isaac Simalo having to shift out to tackle. Jason Kelce has been awesome, arguably still the best center in the game, despite the fact he's clearly dealing with some kind of groin issue. Brandon Brooks has been solid as ever. Peters isn't what he used to be, but I still think he is clearly at least an average starter, I would say, even though some may not feel that way. Lane's been relatively disappointing, not a total disaster. I think, you know, the strip sacks kind of make it look a little worse than it's been. He was still playing at a very high level overall, and the fact that, you know, he had that high ankle sprain on the short week against the Giants, and he toughed that out, and he did it again in the Panthers game. I got to give him some credit for that. So overall, I guess I'm going to say B- for that unit because it hasn't been great, but I don't think it's been downright terrible. And I think, honestly, after rewatching the Jags game a little bit, I was talking to this about to Kist on the postgame show. I was like, was it me or did the offensive line feel like, you know, they were getting some good movement in that game? And they were against a tough Jaguars front and playing with like guys out of position and the line shifting all around. So overall, not great, and maybe it's a little high, but I'll say B-.
Yeah, I'll go a little lower, but I'll say C+. I'm kind of in the same area as you are. I think we expected a little more from Jason Peters, although maybe our expectations were a little bit too high for a guy who is getting much older and obviously dealing with the injuries that an older player would have to deal with. But man, that guy is a warrior, just gutting it out every week. And same with Lane Johnson, who, again, dealing with a lot of injuries, but he hasn't performed quite as well. A lot of that is probably due to the injuries. And Jason Kelce, PFF has him as the number one center in football so far this year. I think they've done a good job in the run game at times, but not all the time. It's just been inconsistent. So that's why I'm going C+ with the offensive line. It just has not been the unit that it was last year, even though you return basically the entire offensive line. Let's flip the script. Let's go over on the defensive side. And obviously one of the strengths of this team, BLG, the defensive line. What is your grade for this unit?
It's tough. Brandon Graham has been coming back, working off of that injury. He still ranks high in the league in terms of pressures, but we're not seeing that necessarily manifest in the form of sacks, which is always important. Fletcher Cox has been a beast, an animal, probably one of the best seasons arguably he's ever had. He's been awesome. That's great. You're getting nothing else out of the defensive tackle position, which is a huge, mark against them in that regard. It's been a tough defensive line situation. Obviously you've been missing Derek Barnett. He's out for the season now. That kind of affects the rotation. Again, Brandon Graham was late to come back into the offseason here. He had that ankle surgery. Chris Long's kind of been relatively quiet, I think.
He has been.
Not like he's terrible now and he sucks, but just like you're not. But again, it's tough, though, because he has to play more now. So it's kind of just a tough situation. I think Michael Bennett has been really good. So I can't give this unit less than a C just because I think he's been so good and Fletcher Cox has been so good. But I guess I'm kind of just going, like B, straight up B here. I don't think they've been the total difference makers that they need to be. And it's been tough for them. It's tough to grade them because I think quarterbacks are just getting the ball out so quick against them. And I think that kind of should be a notch in their favor. They're clearly affecting the other offenses by that token, so they should get some credit for that. But I guess we just haven't seen the dominating pressure, like the dominating defensive line that we were used to seeing last year. And again, the fact that you're just getting literally nothing at defensive tackle outside of Fletcher Cox is kind of disappointing. So maybe I'm being a tough grader here, but I guess I'll just say B.
I'm going to go even tougher. I'm going to say B- because I do think that we have seen, especially in the fourth quarter in games, we've seen the pass rush disappear at times. And at the worst time, when you need pressure on the quarterback the most, we've seen teams have way too much time to throw in the pocket. We saw it against Tennessee. We saw it against Carolina. It was just at the defensive line has not been getting there as consistently as they should late, which is, again, part of the reason is getting the ball out quickly. As you mentioned, the Eagles playing softer coverage and, making it easier for quarterbacks to get the ball out. But also when you're using a rotation like the Eagles have, and granted, the defensive tackle position does not have a whole lot there, so you're not rotating a lot of guys in there. Fletcher Cox is just having to play all the time. But in the fourth quarter, that's when your defensive line should be eating a lot more than it has been. So I'm going to just ding him just a little bit less. I'll start off with the linebackers here. And, I think we've seen from Jordan Hicks over the last 3 weeks, I think he's been much more active. But I will say, too, that I know teams play more nickel now than they ever have before. But the Eagles just, the linebacking core is invisible a lot of weeks, BLG. We talk a lot about the defensive line and we talk a lot about the secondary, but we never say anything about the linebackers because they do play in a lot of nickel, and I realize that, but I just, you know, aside from the occasional Jordan Hicks play, there's just not a lot happening from the linebacker core. And we saw what a guy like Luke Kuechly can do, how much he can disrupt the game. And the Eagles obviously don't have anything like Luke Kuechly. That's just not a position they've ever put. Yeah, right, exactly. But the Eagles have also never been a team that's put a lot of emphasis on the linebacker position. They focus on the defensive line and, you know, on a secondary that you basically hope the defensive line is not having to force your secondary into doing a whole lot. So I'm going to give the linebacking core a C-plus here just because I think they've been largely invisible here in 2018. What about you?
I don't think that's necessarily the worst thing because it's not like, you know, they're like, oh, man, they can't cover anyone, and we're seeing them get burned over and over, and they would be much further from invisible in that sense. But I get what you're saying. I don't think they've been anything like super exciting to write home about. Hicks had that really big play in week 6 to, you know, to force that interception early in the Giants game, which really set the tone for that one. So that, you know, that was a big play. He was also pretty good in week 1 too. I remember, you know, obviously sacking Matt Ryan. So he's had some moments. He even had a couple sacks in this past game. He also gave up that big play later in the game on, seemed like it was like a pick play, kind of tough spot there. But I can't say they've been terrible, but I also can't say they've been great. So I was thinking like B minus, C plus. Like I'm in that range with you.
Okay. Secondary, real quick. Let's just, what do you say about the secondary? I mean, it has been, listen, this is a D unit right now. I mean, wow. It's just, they don't have the talent. I mean, that's just clear. They don't have talent back there. I don't know that the scheme has helped them out a lot, especially late in games, but I have zero confidence in the secondary, and a lot of it is injury related, but you know, they're not getting turnovers either, BLG, and some of that's luck, but some of it is they're just not making plays on the ball. They're not getting their hands on the ball, they're not getting interceptions, and the defensive line has been doing a good enough job, at least in the first three quarters of games, to allow the secondary to kind of make some plays, but it's been an unimpressive unit. I gotta give the secondary a D.
Yeah, I think I'll go D plus just because, you know, Daniel Mills had a good game against the Colts. Like the secondary has had moments. I think Ronald Darby overall on the whole is actually having an okay year. I think he has had some good moments as well. Malcolm Jenkins was huge in that Titans game.
He was.
I mean, if they won that game, I think that game would be like, wow, look how dominant like Malcolm Jenkins was. It's kind of a shame they wasted his performance there because he was so clutch, and he was a big reason they were even in that game late. So there's been moments. I don't want to say like it's just been like a disaster and they've never looked good at all. And the fact that you're getting like competent play at a Avante Maddox is impressive, and Ronnie McLeod, I know he got hurt in week 3, so he didn't play very much, but he was having a really good season, I thought.
Yeah, losing McLeod was such a killer. I mean, that just really submarined everything.
So I can't say like, you know, I can't go F or like D minus. I'll go D plus.
All right, that's fair. And let's do Doug and Schwartz here. We'll start off with Schwartz. What is your grade for the Eagles defensive coordinator?
Oh, it's tough because it's such like a nuanced conversation to talk about this Eagles defense because, I mean, you know, Pro Football Focus comes out and it's like, oh, they're the fourth best defense. And it's like, that doesn't feel right because you look at how they've given up some big leads here in these games. And, you know, you can't be like, oh, yeah, this is definitely like the fourth. This defense is great. They're awesome. But when you look at the context of the league, I mean, they're not a terrible defense in that sense. And even I think DVOA, they're like 16th. So they're like around the middle of the pack. They're not a flat out bad defense. But I just also don't think they're a top five unit. I don't think they're that good. I don't think they're an elite defense by any means. It's tough. I just feel like overall, the discussion on him gets a little too, it gets a little too harsh, I guess, thing is sometimes like people are like, oh, fire him. Like, no, like I don't think people realize that, again, like that defense for it's just clearly not easy to play in the NFL, especially like how the game has gone. And when you look at Jim Schwartz's past, I think 5 seasons strictly as a defensive coordinator, not talking about as a head coach, just strictly as a defensive coordinator, he's had a top 7 unit all of those 5 years. So like, how can you just be like, oh, this guy sucks? I know you get frustrated at the lack of blitzing or whatever, but like the results are there. to a large part. So I can't say he's been horrible. At the same time, I don't think, like, how many games have we seen here where Jim Schwartz is just totally out scheming the other offense? You know, like, oh man, you know, Schwartz just has, he's in their heads, you know, like he
right.
We haven't seen that. So I can't say like he's been this master coach. I guess I feel like for him, like a C plus is fair.
Yeah, I think that's fair too. I would say a C plus as well. I don't, you know, one of my criticisms of Jim Johnson back in the day was that they couldn't get pressure on a quarterback other than to blitz. You know, they blitzed too much. And so when teams would be able to pick up their blitzes, like going a guy like they'd face a guy like Peyton Manning, when he'd see every blitz coming a mile away, the Eagles defense would get torched. Here you've got the exact opposite. You've got a guy who won't blitz, only wants to get pressure with the front four, and you know, a lot of times that burns him too. The injuries in the secondary have really hurt this team, really hurt this defense, and it's affected how Jim Johnson can scheme. I will say though that I don't know, I agree with you, I don't think he's been overly inventive in trying to figure out ways to beat teams other than with the scheme he's used to. So I think I'll go with you. I think I'll go with a C plus. And real quick, Doug Peterson, head coach of your Philadelphia Eagles, 4-4 through the first half of the season. What's your grade for Doug? He's had a very interesting first half.
I think it's a B minus. I think it's, you know, the offense hasn't been awesome, but is that really because of Doug? I don't think so. I don't think it's been just play calling here. I think play calling, especially against the Jaguars, was actually looking better. And when you consider that the Eagles got at least three chunks of 30 plus yard gains against the Jaguars defense that was allowing like the fewest in the league. So very encouraging to see there heading into the bye. And the fact that, you know, early in the season, the Eagles are working again without like their top two running backs and Darren Sproles and Jay Ajayi. You know, they're missing Mike Wallace and Alshon Jeffrey, and even Mac Hollins is out. So they're without three of their top four wide receivers. There's obviously been some offensive line issues in here. You look at all those things. You have a quarterback coming off an ACL injury. There's certainly been moments where you've questioned what Doug is thinking. The Tennessee game sticks out still, where he runs the ball late in the first half instead of taking a shot into the end zone. Like, there's, don't get me wrong, there's definitely been moments where Doug hasn't been great here, but I think overall, I still feel good about Doug, and I'm going to give him a B minus because I think it's just kind of been a tough situation here. I still have a fairly good amount of confidence in him.
Yeah, I'll go a little bit higher. I'll say a B for Doug. It is interesting. I think he hasn't been as aggressive as he was last year at certain times, but you know, again, like you said, personnel injuries play a big part of it, and I also think this offense has been forced to score on long fields all season long. The defense has not put them in positions to score easy, quick touchdowns on short fields for much of the season too, which happened a lot last year, and that's why the offense was able to do what it did. I don't know that they're scheming Nelson Aguilar exactly the best way, and obviously there was no way they were going to be able to maintain the third down conversion rate and the red zone conversion rate they had last year, but it also has slipped a little bit more than I think I thought it would. So, but I think overall Doug has done a good job, and I think he's, you know, you look at some of the, you look at Carson's numbers and Alshon's numbers and Zach Ertz's numbers, and you know, this is a unit that can score some points, and I think Doug has done an okay job there, so I'll give him a B as well. All right, real quick, let me just run down the NFC East schedules looking ahead here in the second half. The Eagles will start off with the 3-4 Cowboys, then they get the Saints at 6-1. That will be a tough one. Giants at 1-7 after that, then the Redskins at 5-2, the Cowboys at 3-4, the Rams, of course, undefeated right now at 8-0. They get a revitalized Texans team at 5-3, and then the Redskins at 5-2. BLG, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of their final 8 games are against teams with a winning record. Mm. However, you compare that to Washington, just one of their final 8 games is against a team with a winning record, and that is the Texans, who they play in a couple of weeks. They get the Jaguars and the Titans still, and the Buccaneers still on their schedule. And hey, listen, the Eagles lost to the Bucs and the Titans, so we can't complain about schedules here. The Eagles blew their chances against those teams, and maybe Washington will do the same. And then finally, looking at the Cowboys, they have the Eagles, Falcons, Redskins, Saints, Eagles, Colts, Bucks, and Giants. So just two teams left on their schedule with a winning record, the Redskins and the Saints, although hopefully by that time the Eagles will, of course, have a winning record as well. But definitely, looking at that schedule, Washington seems to have the easiest road ahead. Although, you know, I'm not convinced Washington's going to go, you know, what, you know, I'm not convinced they're going to go 6-2,
yeah,
5-3 in the final eight. You know, I watch this team play almost every week, BLG.
Mm-hmm.
That offense doesn't score.
Yeah.
You talk about the Eagles' offense not scoring. Washington's offense doesn't score.
Yeah, they're not a juggernaut by any means.
And no.
Alex Smith, again, he will raise their floor, like we said, going into this year. But he also limits their ceiling. Like, he's not,
yeah,
he's not going to just turn into like an MVP player down the stretch,
right?
Like, at least right, based on his career this far, it's just not going to happen. And look, this is not an easy stretch at all for the Eagles here down here. But I mean, if I had to say how many games they win out of these final eight here, I think they can win. I think they can win. At least four. At that point, you're 8-8. But, you know, they get Washington twice. So if you beat them twice, that's huge. Like,
you might win it. 9-7 might be enough if you do that.
Yeah, you have the head-to-head tiebreaker at that point, and that's big. So I think that's – I mean, it's very simple to say, but that's what it comes down to here. Like, you might even be able to lose these Saints and Rams games, and that'll be fine. Like, just take care of business in the division, and, you know, that Texans team comes into town. I don't think they're – like, they're, what, on a 4 or 5-game winning streak right now?
Five-game winning streak.
It's like – that's such a weird – like, they're not that good, man. Like, they're playing better, but, like, that perplexes me. Like, this is not – and I think they play a bad team this week. Like, they could easily advance to, like, 6 wins. So, anyway, and that game will be in Philly. So,
not a lot of worry there.
Yeah, I think they can. I think they can win five here. I think this Eagles team has the potential to sweep the division. Like I know that's not a gimme, but I think, because I just don't think anyone in the East is that unbeatable. I think the Washington game will be hardest to do that in, clearly, but I think it's on the table. I don't think it's out of the question.
No, it's definitely on the table. This is not a strong division by any means, but
and just another thing, real quick. Like, the good thing about where the Eagles are, if you want to spin it this way, is that if they make the playoffs, they will have deserved it. And that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's not like they can't back in. They're not going to back into the playoffs. Like, if they make this thing, it's because they're going to be playing well and they will be a hot team. So that's something to look forward to going into the playoffs. It's not going to be like, oh, right, the playoffs roll around and like it's like, even last year when they had a better record, it was like, oh man, Foles is not looking good. I don't know how I feel about this. Whereas, like, you know, you go into it this year, if they're going to make the playoffs, it's going to be like, wow, the Eagles, they're just so hot in the second half and they're going into the postseason and they're the team that no one wants to play. So you can kind of spin it like that.
Yeah. You don't have to be the one seed necessarily. Getting that first round bye sure is nice, but you know, we've seen lots of teams win 3 playoff games to get to the Super Bowl. Real quick, let's run down some NFL picks here, BLG, to wrap things up. We'll start off with the 2 NFC East games because you have the Giants on the bye this week, although, you know, really, who cares about the Giants at this point? But you got Atlanta at Washington. Washington is a 1.5-point favorite against the Falcons. Who do you like in that one?
Man, I'm going to be a sucker and take Atlanta because I just think the Falcons are more desperate, you know, to stay alive in the NFC South there. Very tough with the Saints and the Panthers ahead of them. But I just think they're going to be the more desperate team. They're coming off of their bye, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe I am. Not sure. Look this stuff up. But
I feel like they played last week, but I'll double check.
I think they have what it takes on the road. I think they've been a little bit unlucky to start the season here. They last played on Monday Night Football against the Giants, so they did have their bye, so that's another thing working in their favor. They should be well rested here, and I just think, you know, Washington's won 3 in a row. I just think they're kind of due for a loss here. Like, I don't think they're as good as that 5-2 record makes them seem to be, so I will take the points here.
I will take the points as well. I agree with you for almost the exact same reasons. I don't think Washington is as good as their record. I think they've been kind of doing it through mirrors a little bit here. So I agree with you. I think the Falcons coming off the bye goes into Washington. It's about, you know, Washington's overdue for a crippling home loss. So I feel like this is going to be that loss. Dallas also plays at home this week. They host the Titans. Dallas is a 5-point favorite to me, BLG. You know, why is it that Tennessee played the Eagles so tough and they've just laid down against everybody else? Yeah. But Dallas is a 5-point favorite. do we think that Dallas is back? Do we think that Dallas might actually be decent now? Because I got to tell you, I feel like Dallas can cover this. I would have to probably take the Cowboys in this one.
To me, it's not even about that. I think the Titans are just, they're pretty garbage, man. And like, they got shut out a couple weeks ago.
And we lost to this team. We lost to this team.
So how
man.
Can you like... if they can't even score any points in a game, how can you expect them to just come in and you know, keep it within 5 years? So, I mean, they do have a little bit of fight in them, but man.
They're spunky.
Yeah, I don't see it. I think the Cowboys are going to win, unfortunately, and it'll set up Eagles and Cowboys both being 4-4 heading into that Week 10 Eagles-Cowboys game.
Oh, man, it's going to be such a big matchup. Let's run down three other games real quick. There's some really good games on the schedule here on Sunday. You got the Steelers at the Ravens. Ravens favored by 3 points. The Ravens, pretty good football team this year here so far, BLG. Joe Flacco seems to want to keep his job. And, you know, you've got the Steelers who I think now resigned to moving on without Le'Veon Bell for the entire season. Maybe that's the way it was anyway. But, you know, these Steelers-Ravens games are always really rough matchups. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a game Steelers, Ben Roethlisberger, they just don't play as well on the road. Tough to go into Baltimore and beat the Ravens in this matchup. I like the Ravens with the points. What do you think?
I will ring the bell because I feel like the Ravens aren't going to sweep the Steelers. Baltimore's been struggling a little bit lately. Joe Flacco has kind of lost a little bit of his luster recently.
Okay.
I think the Steelers kind of have their mojo back too. So I'm going to take the Steelers with the points, and that would be great here if the Ravens lose again, because the Ravens would be 4-5 at that point. It'd be tougher for them to make the playoffs. That's important with the Eagles owning their second round pick. We want the Ravens to pretty much lose as much as they can here, because, and especially stay away from the playoffs, because that helps that second round pick be better. And it's even more important now, obviously, with the Golden Tate trade and not having that third round pick. So I'm hoping I'm right here. I'm hoping the Ravens lose.
All right, go Steelers. You've got the Rams at the Saints. What a game this is going to be later in the day. Rams are 1-point favorites at New Orleans. I feel like the Rams are due for a loss here. This team, I don't think they're going undefeated. This feels like a great spot for the Rams to lose their first game of the season, BLG. I'm going to take the Saints.
I agree with you. The Rams are undefeated, but they're not invulnerable. Like, they've come close in some of these past for like a month now. They played some close games. They obviously got very lucky that Aaron Rodgers didn't get the ball last week.
Oh, yeah.
Just a disaster. I mean, come on. What are you doing, Ty Montgomery?
Take a knee, dude.
I love that they just traded him out of spite. There's like,
I know, right here. F that guy.
I feel like Rodgers was like definitely the driving force behind that trade too. He's like, get this guy, like, he's gone, like, you mess with me, you're out of here. So I like the Saints at home too, and it's basically a pick 'em, but you know, if they're getting a point, I mean, hey, I'll take it. Maybe there's a tie, who knows. I think the Saints are honestly just, you know, they could be the better team here. So I'll go with them.
Okay, last one. Packers at Patriots. Patriots favored by 6, playing up in Foxborough. I really feel, BLG, like the Packers lost their chance to really make some noise last week, and I don't know that they'll have a whole lot left. I mean, that was a tough game to lose that game against the Rams, against an NFC opponent. Now you got to go into New England to take on the AFC champions. I mean, Rodgers versus Brady, I think it's going to be a good game. Yeah. But this feels like a game where the Patriots pull away in the end. So I'll take the Patriots and the 6 points.
Yeah, man.
It's a big line.
Yeah, it is a big line.
You know, Rodgers, you know, getting 6 points, it's tempting.
Yeah, I mean, Rodgers getting 9 points last week was like crazy to me. I was like, this is...
Right.
That was
an easy one.
Yeah, this is a lock to take the Packers. I mean, like, he's at least going to keep it to a one possession game. Like, come on.
Right.
I will take the Patriots here. I agree. I think it's gonna be tough, like back to back weeks to go into LA and to have that game and then to then go on the road again across the other side of the country up in Foxborough, where, you know, it's tough to play in Gillette Stadium typically for those road teams in those primetime spots against Tom Brady. Like, you know, Tom Brady's gonna be extra juiced for this game, as is Aaron Rodgers, but like, come on, like Brady has to like, you know, cement his legacy as the best here with Rodgers coming to town. He's going to be extra amped for this one. And I do think the Patriots win. I just don't, you know, outside of Rodgers, clearly the Packers just aren't very good. So yeah. I think that'll show itself here.
All right, well, BLG, we don't have an Eagles game to look forward to on Sunday. Right, I think this is a game, a week, where we can all just relax a little bit and just kind of watch the rest of the league and take it easy and get our Sunday night football a week from Sunday when the Eagles get back into action against the Dallas Cowboys, hopefully well-rested and recovered from some injuries. Any final thoughts before we wrap up episode 18 here, buddy?
Just rate, review, and subscribe, as always, on iTunes. We really appreciate it. Up to 533 ratings. We're up to 208 reviews. So that's awesome, considering this feed just got started back in August. So really appreciate it. Please continue to do so. We love the feedback. Again, always give us, if you want to see something new, give us ideas. We'll steal them. We won't give you any credit. It'll be great.
Please don't make fun of my voice here on the podcast. And
if you want to make fun of John's voice, if you want to tell us things you hate and we shouldn't do, just, you know, any feedback you want to give us, but as long as it's 5 stars, just, you know, you can give us a negative, give us a criticism or whatever, or constructive in the comments, but give 5 stars. So just that's all I have.
Absolutely. And I will certainly be looking forward to a week where we can just kind of relax and recharge the batteries and get ready for the second half of the Eagles season here, which hopefully will result in a playoff run. But that'll do it for this episode of BGN Radio, episode number 18. For Brandon Lee Gouten, I'm John Stolness. Everybody, thanks for listening. We'll talk to y'all next time right here on BGN Radio.
That doesn't make sense.
Hey guys, this is John Stolness from The Good Fight and the Phillies podcast, Hittin' Season. Man, the 2018 season was, well, it was interesting anyway, and the upcoming offseason looks to be even more interesting. So if you want to stay up to date on all things Phillies this offseason, subscribe to The Good Fight podcast feed and get my podcast, Hittin' Season, where I talk to Phillies beat writers, broadcasters, and fellow Good Fight bloggers, as well as national baseball writers, and the occasional interview with Matt Klentak and Gabe Kapler. Also, you'll get Continued Success, a Phil's podcast hosted by Justin Clue and Liz Rocher, covering all things Phillies, and The Dirty Inning, a hilarious podcast hosted by Justin and Trevor Strunk, looking at the very worst innings in Phillies history. And you'll get bonus podcasts every time big news is made with the team. Seriously, if you want to stay up to date on everything revolving around your favorite baseball team as they return to contention, make sure you are subscribed to the Good Fight podcast feed.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.